Good morning. We're in. We're continuing our study of the Book of Exodus. We have some. We have some
extras of the books here for visitors. If you'd like to, use them, follow along a little bit. Michael, you want to give these to people who might like them. Today we're in Exodus chapter 15. Israel has just passed through the Red Sea. And the Egyptian army was destroyed as they were drowned. And in Exodus chapter 15, we see Song of Moses. Will be sung by Moses and Israel. Okay, and before we begin here, let's go ahead and start with a prayer. Roy, can you lead us in prayer, please?
Bow with me. Our Father in heaven, we thank you for this beautiful day and this day of life. Thank you for this opportunity to have us study your word. Pray that you be with us as we study. We will learn from our study and apply to our lives.
Amen. Okay. Now this is one of the first songs that we have recorded in Scripture. One of a few songs that we have that are attributable. That are attributed to Moses. So one of those is here in Exodus chapter 15. Do you know where some of the other songs that are attributed to Moses are found? Just to ask if you know. Yes, there's one in Deuteronomy 32, and that's the end of Moses' life, and it's a song that he teaches to Israel. There, as he's gathered the elders of Israel up and is making his farewell to them, and that song has some similar language, but is also different in being more comprehensive. It's not so much about Israel's just what God has done for Israel, but really how God has God over the nations has ordered things the way He would. And said his chose Israel out of them. It's also a song to warn Israel at the end of Deuteronomy. Okay. Any others that you know of? There's actually a psalm in the Book of Psalms that's attributed to Moses. Psalm 90 is attributed to Moses. And I guess it's question. His name isn't directly linked with any more of the psalms directly, but there is some authors have suggested that Psalm 90 and maybe some of the succeeding psalms may actually be Moses's, but certainly Moses. Not Psalm 90 is referred to as a prayer of Moses. And then, of course, what's the last reference we have to a song of Moses? Revelation, right? In Revelation chapter 15. When the Apostle John writes, it says, "Then I saw another sign in heaven, great and marvelous, seven angels having the seven last plagues, for in them the wrath of God is complete. And I saw something like a sea of glass mingled with fire, those who had the victory over the beast, over his image, and over his mark, and over the number of his name, standing on the sea of glass, having harps of God, and they sing the song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb." And so it's interesting. The song of Moses, John is still seeing sung there in heaven. And we'll touch on that after we look at the song here that's recorded for us in Exodus chapter 15. Okay, but let's first turn to the text.
Psalms 106.
What?
Psalms 106. also the first, beginning with verse 7, where it says, our fathers in Egypt did not understand the wonders.
Oh, there's lots. There's dozens of psalms that refer to the events of the Exodus and what God has done for them. Yeah, it's just when you look at Psalm 90, right? Moses is attributed to it at the beginning. It's a prayer of Moses, the man of God. You know, many of them will say, you know, some 75, 78 of them clearly say a Psalm of David. Some say a Psalm of Asaph. Some say, you know, different people who it's attributed to. You know, this is the one that we have clearly, you know, attributed to Moses. And so, you know, that kind of makes Moses the first psalmist. That kind of makes Moses the first psalmist that we have. Right? He's the first one that we have hymns recorded that he wrote. Okay? But let's take a look at the specifics of this one here in Exodus chapter 15. And of course, it's directly related to the experience that they've just come through. Okay? So, let's start. Yeah, and take verses 1 through 10. 1 through 10. Who'd like to read that? Here?
Then Moses and the children of Israel sang the song to the Lord and spoke, saying, I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise him. My father's God, and I will exalt him. How far?
Through 10.
The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his army he has cast into the sea. His chosen captains are also drowned in the Red Sea. The depths have covered them. They sank to the bottom like a stone. Your right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Your right hand, O Lord, has dashed the enemy to pieces. And in the greatness of your excellence, you have overthrown those who rose against you. You set forth your wrath. It has consumed them like stubble. And with the blast of your nostrils, the waters were gathered together. The flood stood upright like the heat. The depths congealed in the heart of the sea. Then he said, I will pursue, I will overtake, I will divide the spoil. My desire shall be of all, satisfied of it. I will draw my sword, my hand shall destroy you. You blew with your wind, the sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters.
Okay. And then somebody to read the rest of it from 11 to 18. Who would like to do that? Nick?
Who is like you among the gods, O Lord? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in praise of working wonders? You stretch out your right hand, the earth swallows them. In your loving kindness, you have led the people whom you have redeemed. In your strength, you have guided them to your holy habitation. The people have heard and trembled. Anguish has gripped the inhabitants of Philistia. When the chiefs of Edom were dismayed, the leaders of Moab trembling gripped them. All the inhabitants of Canaan have melted away. Terror and dread fall upon them. By the greatness of your arm, they are motionless as stone. Until your people pass over, O Lord, until your people pass over whom you have purchased, you will bring them and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, the place, O Lord, which you have made for your dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, for which your hands have established. The Lord shall reign forever and ever.
Okay. So this is the great song. And clearly he's singing. I mean, so what's the subject of this song? What are the things, what are the main ideas that Moses covers?
I triumph. Victorious over the Egyptians.
Yes. How the Lord was victorious over Egyptians. Over the Egyptians. And the what?
The strength.
Yes. The strength and the might of the Lord, yes. What other ideas?
Praise
and thanksgiving. Do you see language in here that's similar to what David uses in Psalms? Yeah, and it, you know, I think there's a very real sense in which this first hymn that we have recorded in the scriptures. This is a type for so many of the ones that come along later. Right? This is the first one that sings of the Lord's victory over the nations. Right? Is that a theme that you're going to see consistently through the Psalms? Yeah, in the Psalms of David. You know, that the Lord is great, the power of the Lord is revealed not just to Israel, but to the nations. Right? It's talked about here at the end, in terms of the effect on Philistia and Edom and Moab and Canaan. Right? But he talks about the strength of the Lord, the power of the Lord, sings his praises. Go ahead and turn, if you will, to Revelation 15. And let's take a look at the Song of the Lamb. Go ahead and read for us, Harper, verses 3 and 4.
And they sang the song of Moses, the bondservant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, Great and marvelous are your works, O Lord God the Almighty. Righteous and true are your ways, King of the nations. Who will not fear, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy, for all the nations will come and worship before you, for your righteous acts have been revealed.
Okay, and so this is the song of the Lamb. How similar are the songs of Moses and the songs of the Lamb? The song of the Lamb here is short. We only have a couple of verses. But do you see many of the same ideas?
Praise to God.
Yeah, praise to God. Right? Great and marvelous are your works, just and true are your ways. Sings of his power, sings of his justice, sings of his righteousness, sings of his holiness. And his power there, judgment before all the nations. It's interesting. If you look in Deuteronomy chapter 32, which has been mentioned as the other song of Moses that's recorded for us here. And we're not going to read the whole thing because it's like I said, this one is very specific, and there's a lot in there. There's specific warnings for Israel, judgments to come. Right? Because Moses, when he was going to give him this psalm, you see at the end of Deuteronomy chapter 30, he said, I know your rebellion and your stiff neck. If today, while I am yet alive with you, you have been rebellious against the Lord, then how much more after my death? Right? Moses knows those people and knows what's going to happen. And so he says, I'm going to speak these words in their witness, who called heaven and earth to witness against them. But consider just the first four verses of chapter 32. Now, give ear, O heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, the words of my mouth. Let my teaching drop as the rain, my speech distill as the dew, as raindrops on the tender herb and as showers on the grass. For I proclaim the name of the Lord. Ascribe greatness to our God. He is the rock. His work is perfect. For all his ways are justice. The God of truth without injustice. Righteous and upright is he. Right? So again, very similar language to what we've seen. The Lord is powerful. The Lord is righteous. The Lord is just. He is upright. And he is holy. And as we've said, that's a consistent theme throughout the Psalms. Right, David expounding on those attributes of God over and over. Right, the other writers of Psalms praising the Lord over those things. Some of the interesting language. What are some of the things that Moses specifically says about God? We can start in verse 2. Well, the first verse 1 is triumph. Number 2, verse 2, what? He's my strength, my song, yeah, and he has become my salvation. Now that's an interesting word. We've talked about that. We talked about that just last on this past Wednesday, in verse 30 of chapter 14. said, so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians. And so, as he's using salvation here, what do you think is Moses' use of that?
Deliverance.
Yeah, deliverance, but a physical deliverance, if you will. Right? But in what ways have they been delivered? Is it only a physical thing?
No.
No? It's what?
Redemption.
Spiritual.
And also, I don't know who wrote this song. They're different than 32. This is Song of Moses and Israel.
Yes.
32 is Moses.
Is Moses.
And so, as I read these, Israel's going along with this wholeheartedly, seemingly. And yet later we're going to hear God say, just destroy these people. Because they're tearing their heart completely away from God. And different references with Moses, where it talks about the parting of the sea and the speaking of the power, has to be brought forward. We sang about Christ's death today. Why? It needs to be talked about. But so does God's power and his victory. His victory is over nations.
Yeah.
Over illness. We have several that have been brought through. And his power to carry those that didn't go through as we wished. He is all powerful in things he does. He is victorious in every way. We're talking about his will be done. Yeah, he's victorious.
Yeah.
It may not be what we want, but his will be done.
Yeah. And now while it does say a song of Moses and the children of Israel, then Moses and the children of Israel sang this song to the Lord and spoke, saying these words. Yeah, I would be surprised if it's not Moses teaching this to Israel. Yeah. Because really we don't, there are insights and understandings about the nature of Jehovah and things in here that we don't really attribute to the nation as a whole yet.
But they're in agreement.
Yeah. They're in agreement. There's nothing here that's opposed that they're opposed to. but that's not to say that they understand all of this either.
Yes.
Mike? Yeah.
Just kind of back to your earlier question about whether, how is it this, that other than just a physical deliverance. It's kind of given them their identity again. Because you have Israel beforehand, that he knows that God is his father, that God is his God, and God is his father, so he has the identity, and the promises are there, and then you have all these years of slavery. We talked about it, kind of maybe would have gotten lost. They don't really know. So they rekindle that identity. They have the physical deliverance and the promises of deliverance as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Harper?
I wonder either how long this took to compose or when exactly it was written. Because if I look at like 14 through 16, it talks about kind of just the inhabitants of Canaan and how they've heard the story, and they're fearful and dismayed. That's what we read about in Joshua, right, when you're in Jericho, and kind of the leaders, they have heard all the wonders, and I can't imagine that would have taken a while to actually get there, the message, and then just either Moses has his inspiration here and knows that's how they're feeling, or at some point he has to learn that, but that's not for some time.
Yeah, well, I think for the way it's written, the tense all here is just, that they will hear, right? And they will be dismayed.
Okay.
It's a question of knowing that this is going to go forth. I mean, it's already been talked about several times. The Lord has told Moses, "I'm taking you into the land of these people and giving you the land of these people." They know where it is. There's been mention of Edom and Moab and Canaan. Yeah,
32 is a whole different crew of Israel. These people he's saying this now all died.
Yeah.
So Moses has been able to witness the whole thing. You people are no better different than your parents were. You just learned the lessons.
Well, they've learned some lessons. They're going to have to try to remember those lessons. And he knows they're not always going to remember those lessons very well.
And this is looking forward. Not only will he deliver them, but looking forward, he's going to defeat their ancient enemies, Edom and Moab,
yes.
when they get to the promised land. Then he's going to give them success in crossing over. If they had been faithful, they would have enjoyed all of this for protection and success.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a song of praise, of celebrating what God has done, but there is a tone in here of what God will still be doing for them, right? And looking forward to that. And so that is ultimately a statement of faith. A statement of faith is what that is. Trusting in the Lord that he's going to do what he said he's going
to
do.
Back to your original question, talking about knowing salvation.
Yes, yes.
You know, they had physical salvation, but spiritual salvation is what we're going to do, because we are spiritual Israel.
Yes.
So,
yeah. And he's, okay, and Nick?
It's also interesting because in verse 14, we know that as Israel was leaving Egypt, they were not told to go along the coastline to Philistia, because they weren't prepared to go to battle. But in this psalm, we see that anguish has gripped the inhabitants of Philistia. So, you know, rumors spread quickly, truth spread slowly, but reality is there. I think the Philistines have heard what has happened, or will hear what has happened in Egypt. And, they're probably a bit worried about that, because all indications show Israel headed that way.
Yeah. And really, what is it that these nations have heard? I mean, did they have any knowledge of? I mean, there may have been some ancient knowledge of Abraham and his people back in Canaan, but that was 400 years ago.
I assume they would have. I mean, Egypt would have been a huge economical center, so there'd been trade going in and out.
What they've heard about is what's going on now in Egypt around the Exodus.
And the plagues, because we know that We believe that the period of the plagues lasted about a year. So that gave plenty of time for all the information to be spread, you know, because of the trade routes and everything, and the trade that Egypt had to other countries. So, I mean...
Yeah, ruin and desolation in Egypt, the destruction of the crops, the ruination of the Nile, and the cattle, that's not something that neighboring nations are not going to know about.
Well, right?
Because they depend on them. They're the most powerful nation in the region, right?
And they're not wanting to buy food for their people.
Yeah. But coming back to the idea of salvation, he has become my salvation. The Lord has taken them. He has given them back their identity. He has reclaimed them, redeemed them, right? They will be his people, and he will be their God. Now, these other nations, they had their gods. And when it probably comes down to it, they know exactly how powerful their gods really are. Probably not two. Certainly not anything like what they've been hearing about Jehovah, the God of Israel, and what he's done, what he's doing in Egypt. That's something that's clearly different, on a completely different level. But the Lord has done... He's done more than just save Israel from death, which he has done. But of course, the only reason that they were in danger of death there was because Jehovah was basically baiting Pharaoh, laying a trap for him, right? Had them wandering around over there like they didn't know where they were going, so that Pharaoh would say, "Yeah, they don't know what they're doing. Let's go." Why did we let them go? And the Lord did that so that he could claim his victory over Egypt to do exactly what he did. But Jehovah has done other things, right? He has taken them from bondage, right, to freedom. Freedom, maybe not quite in the sense that, you know, because they are still going to be his people. So he's redeemed them. It's not like they've been redeemed, and that there are going to be no conditions upon that, right? But as yet they haven't done that. That's going to come up in a few chapters, where basically God's going to set that covenant with them, say, I will be your God if you will be your people. And the people have to say, you know, yes, we will be your people, and we will abide by your commandments, and we will, you know, live under that covenant. So they're gonna have to accept it. But at this point, yeah, they've been delivered.
That would have been a real test for them, though, when they went to the land of the Philistines. They would, you know, they weren't prepared for battle. They didn't deal with the Philistines. All of Israelites would have probably turned back.
Well, they grumbled enough going the way that they had to go.
That would have been a real test for them. So, as far as God taking them the way that he took them, I think that God was looking at their hearts.
Yeah, and we're gonna see that even later in this chapter. I mean, when they come to Marah, the first stop that they have, God says, "These are going to be tests. I'm testing you." Right, and so now just as through the we saw that with the series of plagues that there was teaching going on there for Egypt. Teaching going on for Pharaoh to come and to understand who Jehovah was. Israel was learning through those. Right? There was teaching there for Israel too. But there's still a lot of lessons for Israel. And it doesn't take them very long. Right? Only a few days without things for them to start complaining.
As we see, as Israel begins their journey through the wilderness because of their lack of faith, they start building confidence, knowing that God is with them, and then they start placing confidence in themselves, because we see Joshua seeing the figure ahead of him, and he goes up to him and says, "Are you for us or are you against us?" At the time, he doesn't really know that it's Michael, the archangel, but he's reminded that I go before you. So Israel continually is going to have to be reminded that without God, they are nothing.
Yeah.
Even though they are God's people.
Oh no, that's certainly true. And as Mark has already reminded us, you know, the group that Moses is talking to at the end of Deuteronomy is completely different than the group that's singing here, except for the few who did learn that lesson. Right? I mean, Joshua learned that lesson. Caleb learned that lesson. There were some who did, right, and understood.
I mean, there were children that were born after them, but none of the old ones.
Yeah, but none of the old ones. Yes. Somebody gonna say something? Karen, did you? No.
In verse 14, mark the difference. The people have heard and they trembled. Anguish gripped perhaps the Philistine. Doesn't say that about Israel. Everybody else feared God. They're still trying to figure out what's going on. They're still worried about their stomach. They're still worried about the graves. They're still worried about things of this earth. The other countries can see what's coming.
Yeah, Israel, because what is...
Israel hadn't seen that yet.
Yeah. What has been the experience of Egypt, I mean of Israel in Egypt, through the course of the plagues? Yeah, well, there was a lot of bad mouth in Moses. Yeah, but how harsh were the plagues on Israel? They were, right? They were spared, right? I think beginning from probably the third. I think as soon as we started to see the flies. Yeah, after the frogs. Well, the fourth, starting with the swarms of flies after the gnats, was in that from that one on, they didn't affect the land of Goshen where the people dwelt, and so they were spared, and so there were lessons in there that God does discriminate, right? I mean, God does make distinction there between the Egyptians and Israel, but. Yeah, but the message for Israel that they could well have taken is okay, we're protected. We're protected. All these bad things happening around us, and around us, they're not happening to us.
We learned that from our parents. As my brother got spanked, we didn't hang in the room because we'd become part of it. Because whatever happened to him would happen to you.
Yeah.
Could happen to you if you did the same thing. They never seemed to learn that lesson for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, now this is, of course, a specific psalm about the specific actions that the Lord took. But they do recognize Jehovah as a, what in verse 3, Jehovah is a man of war. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord, Jehovah, is his name. And this is the first time that Jehovah has basically given victory over the armies and nations, right, to his people. It's the first time that's happened. It's not the last time that will happen, right? But the first. It's going to happen many times through Israel's history. And so, you know, in that sense, yes, that they're right to praise him for them. But it's part of the Lord's nature that they are coming to know, right? That he has power over nature. He's shown that in the plagues, right? He was able to strike the firstborn of Egypt. And so they can think that, okay, well, our God is similar to other gods, but he's greater than those. He has power over the world around us, and even power to do things like part the Red Sea and let them go over on dry land. But in the minds of the people, you know, earthly power and military power is a different kind of thing. It's a different kind of thing. But the Jehovah has shown that even that is nothing. You know, the power of the greatest army in the world at the time, Egypt. You know, we're probably within a couple, 100 or at the most 200 years of you know, Egypt winning the first, you know, clash of superpowers in the Middle East. It was the huge battle that took place up, I think, in the northern part of Syria, against the Hittites. It's one of the most well recorded of ancient conflicts. You know, and those were enormous armies for the time. Egypt was victorious through the might of their chariots, through the might of the army that Jehovah just drowned. Right. So, yeah, the greatest powers that are known are nothing.
It's funny how long this song lasted. 3 days. Did everything change?
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. Okay, any other comments? I wanted to spend some time on this because, you know, for several reasons. First, because it is really the first hymn that we see in the Scriptures, and it is a type, and we do see so many of the same themes here that we'll see repeated throughout the hymns of Israel, the hymns of David. Right, the Psalms that we have, because this is the first time that God has stepped in and shown his power and brought victory to them, the type of victory that's going to be seen over and over again. And ultimately, there's a reason that the same type of song is sung in heaven. Yeah?
It seems that Israel hasn't existed as a nation.
Yes.
Has no infrastructure, doesn't have. I mean, we're just a few days out of Egypt. And it appears when you get to verse 21 that this song actually becomes their national anthem, so to speak. And Miriam repeats it, almost like we have. I don't know if they kneeled or they stood up, or it sounded like they celebrated when they sang the national anthem in their case. But this was the beginning of their identity as a nation.
Yeah.
How they would be structured, and that God was going to lead them, and that their they would listen to Moses and Aaron.
Yeah.
So these are just the beginnings of a nation. They didn't know who they were either.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is true that, you know, that hymns and songs like this can go up, can play a big part in kind of forging that identity too. Right?
But did Israelites ever listen? You get to the new covenant and they still
listen. They don't always listen. Some listen.
Some do.
Right? Some do. And so you have figures. You can have men like Gideon, right, for instance, who, you know, some of the great judges, and the one who they wanted to take and make him king. And he's like, no, I'm not going to be king. There are some who do understand and understand who know Jehovah the way that Jehovah wants his people to know him. Right? But a lot of them don't. A lot of them just really struggle with that and don't ever get it.
And the brother's idea in the nation, when we look at it today, is the church.
Yeah. Okay, but then also because we have, you know, these themes, the themes that we have here are carried throughout, right? The power of the Lord, he's worthy of praise. Righteousness, you know, because he's righteous, he's holy, his judgment is true, his judgment is righteous, and that he's victorious over all the nations and over all of his enemies, and none can stand before him. Right? Those are things about God which are going to be consistently revealed through here, and the praise is going to be consistent, and that type of song is going to be sung even in heaven. Right, when the Lord is ultimately victorious over all of his foes. Right. Okay, and so as we come to the end of that song here, let's go ahead and get through the rest of this verses. As has been referenced, says, for the horses of Pharaoh went with his chariots and his horsemen into the sea, and the Lord brought back the waters. The sea upon them, but the children of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea. And then Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the timbrel in her hand, and all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. And Miriam answered them, and sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously, the horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. That's the beginning of the song. And so the song was sung and celebrated in Israel as they traveled. Right? And it could have well become their song. You know, I don't know if we would call it an anthem, but something like that. Something that helped define them as who they were. And of course, Miriam danced. And the women here danced. Now, it probably wasn't a lewd or lascivious dance. Probably we can say that. But more a spontaneous outbreak of joy, right, is the type of thing that we're talking about here. And so, you know, in the scripture we have our share of descriptions of sinful dancing, of lewd, lascivious dancing. Certainly the dance of Salome and the way she influenced Herod. We have songs like, we have dances like Miriam's. We have dances like David's before the ark as it was brought into Jerusalem. Of course, there David danced with joy, and his wife wasn't very happy with what he did. She thought he looked like a fool. But David danced with joy. So you know, even here, I guess, we see that not all dancing is sinful dancing. Some dancing is just a celebration, spontaneous celebration of joy and happiness. Are there any thoughts on that? Didn't want to dwell on it, but we wanted to mention it. Yeah. I mean, their hearts are full, right? And so their hearts are full, and so they basically can't stay still.
Yeah.
I mean, how long has it been since they danced? They didn't dance for a while.
Well, there hadn't been anything to celebrate.
That's right.
Right? There hadn't been anything to celebrate. For hundreds and hundreds of years, since they basically became a people. They never had anything to celebrate.
It's very joyous to watch a child when they get something they want, but they just dance.
Yeah.
There's no music, there's no rhythm. They're just so happy. They
just so happy.
Themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's probably a good description of the type of thing that we're seeing. Okay, so let's finish up the chapter. I would like to read that. Vilma, do you want to read 22 through 27?
Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out into the wilderness of Shur, and they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. When they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bare. Therefore it was named, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
Marah?
Yeah.
So the people grumbled at Moses, saying, what shall we drink? Then he cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. There he made for them a statute and regulation, and there he tested them. And he said, if you will give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God, and do what is right in his sight, and give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians. For I, the Lord, am your healer. Then they came to Elim, where there were 12 springs of water and 70 date palms, and they camped there beside the waters.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, three days into the wilderness, and they find no water. And so they start to grumble. The people complain against Moses. What shall we drink? Yeah, that doesn't take them very long, does it? 3 days. You would have... And even understanding that the waters weren't suitable to drink when they arrived there. And I imagine, you know, you've seen movies or read books or shows where you're in the desert and then you finally come to an oasis and there's relief, right? There's water. Water, difficult thing to come by. And so the hope that they have when they reach there is disappointment, right? Because the water is not drinking. Now, given their experience of God, what they've seen of Jehovah so far, though, I mean, how could they have responded to Moses without complaining? Would it have been possible for them to make inquiry to the Lord without grumbling and complaining about it as they do that?
Of course not.
Yeah. Yeah. They could come and just say to Moses, well, what shall we do? What would the Lord have us do? That would be fine, right? Yeah.
Acknowledge what the Lord has done for them.
Yeah.
The Lord delivered us from the Egyptians. The Lord destroyed the Egyptians. The Lord has provided for us all that we need. The Lord shall continue to provide.
Yeah.
Help us to see what we should do.
Yeah, and in fact, many of the Psalms are written that way, right? Where they can be a psalm of supplication. David could be asking the Lord for help, for strength, for mercy, for protection, for any number of things, and still start it with thanksgiving for what the Lord has done for them in the past, right? And that would be a typical pattern for the way David would handle one of those. He would be thanking him for what's been done in the past, an assurance of the Lord's power and his loving kindness, and then a plea. Right?
We have that phrase, you know, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man a fish, feed him for a lifetime. Israel should have said, Lord, teach us so that we may do thy will. Because they will eventually recognize that when they're doing God's will, that God looks down upon them. Because how many times do they go to Moses and say, please entreat the Lord on our behalf?
Yeah.
Are things really different today?
You mean, are people's memories longer today? No, and in a lot of ways, people's memories, yeah, it seems like they're getting even shorter these days. Right? It's what you've done for me today, what you've done for me yesterday. Right? Even 3 days can be a long time.
Well, they start accusing God. I think it's at Mount Sinai, right before Mount Sinai and afterwards, that he's brought us out here to kill us.
Well, they even said that
it was
against the sea, yes.
Just a lack of faith right there at the Red Sea. And, you know, in contrast, people, we all get perplexed with God. Why are we in this? Job was that way. But he never turned against God. He didn't understand why he was in the plight he was in. And I think when we have doubt and weakness, it's not right, but that's a normal human reaction. But to turn against God and accuse him of wanting to destroy us, and he, after all that he's done, to turn against him, that is what angers him against these people.
And he is, as it is said there in verse 25, he is testing them. Right? Testing them. How do you pass the Lord's tests? How do you pass those tests? Yeah, doing what he tells you, and just place your confidence in him.
Yeah, the testing is the training. That word gets used over and over and over. He's testing and he's training them. And if they pass it, then he's going to put more on them until they finally get to the point where they can trust him.
Yeah.
But that's the whole lesson for us, to read this and figure out how do we get past these points in our life. We remember. We sing a song. We have to remember.
Yeah.
And the only difference in us being now and them at that time is that we got God's Son.
Well, we have God's Son, and we have the better revelation, right? We have a clearer picture than they did then. Okay. All right. Thank you.